And welcome to Weather and Ag and Focus on this Tuesday, April 22nd, 1:06 in the afternoon. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with our Ag Director, Bridget Riedel. And Bridget, we saw some much-needed rainfall overnight, generally about a tenth to a third of an inch around much of the valley and into western Minnesota. But out west, where they really need it, areas up around Tioga got pretty close to an inch of rain. But just south of there, areas around Watford City only picking up about 0.2 inches. So there was a pocket of some heavier rain in the northwest corner of the state. But, boy, those areas out west really need it. And there's good news is there's more widespread rain in the forecast over the next week.
I think the greatest help is it brings down the fire index.
Yeah, no
doubt. Because, you know, we have situations where we're not even going out into the fields with equipment unless absolutely necessary, just in order to avoid the possibility of fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, there's a whole bunch of noise above our heads. I'm like, what are we doing? We're adjusting the flag.
Somebody's taking it down, I bet.
Goodness.
Allison, you can hear that over the air. Addison, can you hear that in there?
Yeah, I just want to say as a sound like mixer and producer, that terrified me. Like, what is that? Something is going wrong.
Somebody on the roof.
I thought someone was like playing with their mic or something. I was like, well, something's happening.
We've had a lot of chaos happen here in the last few days. I can only imagine how much more that's going to affect us. So, speaking of chaos, slight change in programming today that we're scheduled to do, and that is earlier today when I was on air, I mentioned that we would have Suzette Archibald Baldwin joining us from the North Dakota State University Plant Diagnostic Lab at 1:30. Unfortunately, we had to make a change for Suzette, but unfortunate for many of our listeners, we anticipate a call with USDA Secretary Brooke Rollins. We will see if she can join us. That would be by phone, and hopefully we get an opportunity to visit with her. If you are listening and have questions for Secretary Rollins, I would ask you to go right ahead and start dropping those in my inbox. You can email me, ag@flagfamily.com. You can also reach us through our live streams on Facebook and YouTube, WDAY, Weather and Ag in Focus, and you can find us on Acres TV as well. Leave those questions that you have, and we're going to try to work those in as much as we can. We greatly appreciate it when folks do that. They send us what they're thinking. So we'll see what happens at 1:30 today.
Yeah. I'm sure a lot of questions out there. So, yeah. Or you can email us, weather@flagfamily.com.
Yes, you as well. Because we'll be very busy watching what's going on here.
No doubt about it.
Once this thing starts.
No doubt. And we've got a little bit of weather. We finally saw some rain overnight. And again, picking up about a tenth to a third of an inch across the area. So not a whole lot, but still raining lightly right now up around Thief River Falls. All that is slowly diminishing, and we're actually going to see a little more sunshine there, a little more sunshine in the far southern valley where temperatures are already in the low 60s. The rest of us hanging in the 50s, and eventually we'll see a few more breaks in the clouds as we head throughout the afternoon. And that's going to lead to temperatures topping out in the low 60s today with a west wind about 15 to 25. We'll have clear to partly cloudy skies overnight tonight with lows in the mid to upper 30s. And for Wednesday, a little more sunshine with highs into the mid-50s. Clouds come back on Thursday and Friday with highs in the upper 50s Thursday, right around 60 Friday. Could see a sprinkle or two Thursday night. Not a big deal. But then over the weekend, we warm things back up into the 60s, and a very wet weather system comes our way as we head into Sunday and Monday. Saturday looks okay. If you have any outdoor plans over the weekend, Saturday looks decent, a little bit breezy, and then that rain overspreads the area Sunday and Monday. And we're getting very strong indications of about a half inch to an inch of widespread rain on Sunday and Monday. So that's good news for our ag community, good news for our gardeners, just for everything in general. We need more of a widespread rain event, and that looks like it is coming Sunday into Monday.
Careful what you wish for.
I know.
We live in an area that people start saying, boy, we could really use some rain. And 2 inches later, there we are.
Yeah, now we can't get out in the field for
a while.
That's
exactly right. Depending on what we see for further rainfall. So, by example, we had about just under 0.4 at my house last night. So we had a little bit of rain. Depending on how much more rainfall we have, we'll explain whether or not we plant our wheat tomorrow. And that is for our Here We Grow project, where we're custom farming 20 acres of wheat. And we will be doing that southwest of Gardner, North Dakota. So it gets a little sticky there. That's more of the gumbo. And thank you to a couple of our sponsors who are helping us. One is Ellings and Companies, where those folks are not just about drainage, but when you have all sorts of projects, whether you are looking at rural water systems, you're putting in water lines, so much more when it comes to excavating, and they are experts at it, you're going to want to make sure to reach out to the folks at Ellings. And then Codico Fuels and Propane, because they really power what we do in the field by making sure you have fuel for the tractors, gas for the pickups, and of course, propane in case we need it for the dryer later this year.
Have you talked to Jim? Is he hopeful of getting out there tomorrow?
That was the goal, was depending on around rainfall today, was to plant tomorrow.
What was the cutoff, like a third of an inch?
I don't think there's necessarily a cutoff. It's if we drive out here and we look like we're going to get stuck, we're not doing it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's usually the call of what you're going to do.
Right.
Now, interesting enough, we have been doing this project for 3 years. This will be year three of us planting our Here We Grow project. There is a journalist who was from New York who decided to be a row crop farmer last year. He was able to get 20 acres of prime Iowa farmland, and he wanted to figure out if he could make money raising corn last year. And he was given every cheat code you could imagine. He was able to use new John Deere equipment with the bells and whistles. He pretty much had a blank check for seed, crop input, so that would include fertilizer, weed control, fuel, and his labor. He ordered up soil tests. He did all of the things he was supposed to do, used all the technology. And then on his 20 acres, what was his total profit? Any idea? Total profit on the entire 20 acres.
Boy, no clue.
Well, and
I wouldn't even know where to start.
Well, our next segment guest is with us. That's Brad Olstead. He's here with Steffes Group. You want to wager a guess on what his profit was on 20 acres of corn last year?
Boy, I guess, in my opinion, with everything that was basically provided in Iowa and production and the price, I would say less than 100.
It was. It was $20.
Yeah.
$20 on 20 acres.
Wow.
Hmm? That was a story this morning from Farm Journal.
Wow.
I know. I'm not totally surprised. So this journalist learned some lessons. One, the weather doesn't seem to do what you want it to do.
Yeah.
Who here shocked?
That's for sure.
Don't see that on either one of you. You have to eradicate weeds or they will rob your yield and destroy your profit. Yes. That's a big yes. Variation is the enemy. You need consistent production, harvesting at precise moisture levels as well as timing. And he saw a dry late summer, early fall. That was a factor that was uncontrollable, but it does cost you in final yield. If your corn will dry down too fast in the field, you can't get it off in time. And water is truly money when it comes to corn and soybean farming.
Oh, yeah.
So,
now, was he irrigating or no?
No, this was dry land.
Okay, it was dry land.
Yeah, he produced 3,000 total bushels of corn, equates to over 200,000 pounds. He was 209 bushels per acre. And when you look at his total expenses for the year, so what he would have paid was $16,456 when he sold his corn. And we say 20 acres, but of course not all of that is completely tillable. He actually had 19.24 acres when he harvested and sold his corn. It was for $16,478. So yeah, he made about $20.
Mm.
Boy, that's quite a risk.
Not too encouraging, is it?
No.
Yep, we were talking about that earlier. I don't know that that feels incredibly encouraging, but I think it's a tremendous learning moment.
Oh, absolutely. When you consider that there's no capital investment in regards to machinery, a lot of these operations are carrying anywhere from $75 to $150 an acre machinery cost. So that's just there on machinery cost, and there's so much more variables out there. That's not even paying for production agricultural land. There's some substantial losses that happened in calendar year 2024. There's still a lot of resilience out there. There's a lot of people that were blessed with very good yields. There was some opportunities in marketing, mm-hmm. and I think that's where everybody really has to sharpen their pencil these days and look for every opportunity to fine-tune their operation. And that's going to take it to the bottom line. I had an old friend, no longer with us anymore, Mr. Larry Henderson, and he always said, Brad, are you farming for show or are you farming for dough? And when it comes into equipment purchases and things like that, it really struck home. And it's kind of one of those things that kind of take home to our operation, and it's very, very important. Everybody's in cost-cutting mode. If you have a non-performing asset sitting on your operation, turn it to cash, because that's only going to take it to the bottom line.
That will help tremendously. Some of the other helps and things that we might know about. Earlier today, Secretary Rollins, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Brooke Rollins, announced here in Fargo an additional $340 million in USDA disaster assistance to various areas of the country for farmers and ranchers and rural communities. She mentioned specifically about $5 million for electric infrastructure following storms and wildfires. Also another $25 million to relief in North Carolina, $18 million to Tennessee impacted by hurricanes. And then there's a breakdown of so much more. So there is indeed a press release where all of this was announced, that this is going to be in addition to previously announced dollars that are going to be spent to farmers. So that was an additional $340 million being spent. So those are just some of the things that are going on with USDA. Also, from those who were in attendance today listening to Secretary Rollins speak, she made mention of an item that's particular to this part of the country, and that is there will be a 33% tariff put on sugar imports. So for our sugar beet farmers, talking about, they would say leveling the playing field a little bit more. I'm sure it's just not quite that easy. There's a lot more to it. But yes, we were looking at an additional tariff on sugar would be one of the things to know. All right. Well, we have much to consider. And again, if you have questions, we anticipate a phone call here around 1:30 with Secretary Rollins. She is out here on the behest of Senator Hoeven, wanting to do some things up at NDSU. She's here for a technology demonstration in the region, and then we'll be heading on out. But there's a lot going on in the region. If you have questions that you want us to make sure to pose to Secretary Rollins, be sure to send those over, ag@flagfamily.com or weather@flagfamily.com. When we return from the markets, we will have On the Auction Block with Brad from Steffes Group. We'll be back. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus, and it is On the Auction Block. We have with us Brad Olstead. He is with the Steffes Group. Brad, how's things today?
Well, tell you what, we started out nice and early this morning and went down and looked at some equipment. And, you know, we're only as good as our last auction sale, so we're always hunting for business. What a weather change. It was nice to see the rain. I got to see my first spring wheat field that was emerging south of Wahpeton, so that's always nice to see.
Nice.
And all of the rain amounts in my travel today was anywhere from a quarter inch to three-tenths to one-tenth to a dust settler.
Right.
All within 140 miles.
Well, that I believe. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I felt like I made you a little bit nervous before we got started because you said, Brad, if you got the option to ask the Secretary of Agriculture a question today, what do you think it might be?
You know, gave it some thought. And in my travels and what I've experienced here in the last year and the changes in production agriculture and the uncertainty, especially with our exports, that would be something I'd want some clarification on. And what kind of not necessarily a game plan, but transparency to people that are in production agriculture, raising livestock. They're making such huge capital investments into their operations. And, you know, there's a look back and clarity and a look back. And it just, if I could get that type of an answer, and I know it's not an overnight answer, it's something that has to be planned out when you have transitions within power. But, you know, we're out here trying to produce. We're all out here trying to make a living. But we need our government. We need our people to be transparent. And I feel that it's very, very important to give that baseline, and it also gives hope.
Yes.
And what farmers are, what ranchers are, we're eternal optimistic as individuals. We want to scale. We want to grow. But it's all about, at the bottom line, we want to feed the American people and the world.
We're here to raise the ingredients that go into your food. And I will continue to say this. I realize that we have a lot of concern about food inflation right now. In the grand scheme of things, we still have the cheapest, safest, and most abundant food supply in the entire world.
Boy, howdy. And, you know, we're proud to say that.
Sure we are. We should be.
I mean, and I tell you, you know, you get out into the buying public and you get into watching these guys get in their tractors. And I was down at Fairmont, North Dakota today, and there was over 50 tender trucks waiting in line to get product out to fields.
I bet I know right where that was, actually.
Yes, you sure do. But it's just nice to see that excitement,
yeah.
Okay? And you go into a coffee shop or you go into a service station and they say, well, how are things going today? Well, I'm super excited. I got my first quarter of corn in.
Yep.
I got my wheat starting to germinate. There's just a bounce in their step. And even though on the backside, there's uncertainty. Okay. My cash flows this year are a little bit weak. We're looking at commodity prices that are kind of trending in an area where it doesn't show profitability. And that's concerning. But what do producers do? Guess what? They put the seed in the ground, and they do their best, and they're trying to feed the world. And I'm just proud to be part of that whole industry.
That's great. Brad, you know, with the tariffs that are in place right now, is there any signs that that's going to affect equipment, auctioning for land, equipment, anything like that?
Well, I get that question asked a lot. Now, we have expanded into Canada, so Canada's been a big hot button. In fact, we got three or four sales that are going to be transacted this week. And, you know, everybody's asking, tariff, what do I do? If you're a North Dakota or a U.S. citizen and you're a farmer and you purchase in Canada, if you have that invoice in your name in Canada, you can drive it across the border. No tariff.
Yeah, we learned that when talking to Max when he was with us. Yeah. That was pretty cool.
And so that kind of little breath of fresh air, because everybody thought, oh boy, howdy, how's this going to work?
Yeah.
But, you know, I think everybody has to give it some time. Okay, our president hit us with a lot of situations here, and I do believe that he has the U.S. farmer and the ranchers at heart, and I see an ending to this. I do. And you got to believe, and that's what we are. Like I said, we're eternal optimistics as far as in production agriculture and ranching, and we got to trust the leaders that we elected that they're going to take care of us, and I truly believe that they're going to.
That's a long-term plan.
It is a long-term plan.
So I do want to ask this when it comes to what's coming up on equipment auctions these days, with so much discussion about targeted optic systems on sprayers, so See and Spray sprayers, okay?
Yes.
But there's also nine other opportunities out there. There is IntelliSense from Case and New Holland. There is Fendt has their own with its own brand name on it as well. That's the nozzle by nozzle control. Ag Leader has one. Have you started to see those on the auctions, or when do you anticipate they might start?
They've started, and quite frankly, they're sought after.
Okay.
In fact, people are taking, say, their older model sprayers like John Deere. I'll use, for instance, John Deere 4045.
Yep.
2015, 2016 didn't have the See and Spray option.
Right. It came after 2018.
You can convert that sprayer.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing's happening with these high-speed planters. You can convert. Is it easy to do? No. Is it expensive? Yes. But when you think about what is happening in production agriculture, the See and Spray, the high-speed planter, the ability to plant and count seeds and have that direct placement. You're talking about Case. Some of these field cultivators have sensitivity into the shovels, so it adjusts. You can adjust on the fly on these planters that you're going through a normal seeding condition and you get through a wet spot. It automatically compensates.
Yes.
And it's just incredible. So there is a pent-up demand for that. And just like what we always talked about, we did a nice farm retirement sale last week, older line of equipment, great reputation as far as the owner, always been cared for and well-maintained. And we got a 20% premium on his line of equipment just because that caring seller made for a caring buyer.
Yes, and that matters. When, as a recent college graduate, I remember being sent to an auction at Harwood by my dad. He said, "Hey, there's this truck on there. It's a twin screw Chevy truck." And he says, "I need you to go buy that." "Sure. How much should I pay?" "Well, whatever you think is right." "Well, how do I know what I'm looking for? Does it look like it's in good shape?" "I don't know." I said, "How am I going to pay for this?" He says, "Write a check. I'll pay you back." That was in the days where we could do that. I don't think that happens all the time now, Brad.
Was he happy with your purchase?
They had that truck for years after I bought that truck. Yeah.
You'd be an auctioneer's dream. Bid one more time. Smile if you want to bid. Oh, man, I'd have fun with you.
Which, by the way, I'm going to ask you to do that. I want to hear the auctioneer's chant today. So you said you were going to sell something. Is it Dean?
Well, I don't know, Dean. He said he wasn't going to be worth much, but I'll give it a try.
Yeah, probably not going to get a whole lot, but we'll see.
We used to call those labor auctions in FFA.
I could get in trouble for that, too. Well, folks, I got a 4020. Hey, look at there. It's a nice one. It's a clean one. Got a power shift. Hey, look at there. Give me 25,000. Hey, look at there. Give me 25. Thank you. Hey, now 30. Give me 35. I'm 30. Is there now 35,000. 35,000. Yes, now. Do you want to bid in 35 now? 37.5. Oh, hey, down 37 pine out 40. I'm a 37 pine right here bidding 40.
45.
Yes, oh, 40. Oh, that's too much, sir. 45. Hey, look at there now. 45, 45. Do you want to bid? How about 42 and a half? Do you want to do it? 42 and a half and a bid 45 now. 47, 5. Hey, look at there now. 7,
I'm
5. How about 46? I'm 46 now. 7, 7, 7. Want to bid? You better bid. Time's up. Sold it. 46,000 right here. Buyer number. Buyer number 970.
Oh, that makes these days a lot more fun, Brad. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome.
Greatly appreciate you coming in. Folks, we are going to touch on our bottom of the hour news. Do not forget that you need to take the time to talk with Chris Sherman at Tech Support Farm, because he's going to help you out and make sure all your end-to-end encryption, all of your equipment, and your data is protected. Catch him at techsupportfarm.com.
All right. Thanks, you guys.
And every once in a while, they let some goofball from down the hall hang out with them in the Weather and Ag Show together, which you can watch nationwide on Acres TV. I'm a radio guy. I have a face made for radio. Don't you know that? Bridget Riedel, our ag director, and Dean Wysocki, our chief meteorologist, are here. And
we can get you some makeup.
That'd be good.
Okay.
I just left NDSU, and I tell you, covering, you know, the talk radio scene and things in North Dakota, Minnesota, South Dakota since the 80s, I've never seen a roundtable with a cabinet secretary more efficient and more connected. Between Brooke Rollins, the U.S. Ag Secretary, who has been welcomed here by our congressional delegation, Senators Hovin, Kramer, Congresswoman Fedorchuk, Governor Armstrong today, Doug Goring, our Ag Commissioner in grand fashion, along with NDSU President David Cook, and we're pleased to be joined now by President Trump's Ag Secretary, Brooke Rollins. Secretary Rollins, nice to have you in North Dakota.
Well, what a beautiful day in Fargo, and thank you. Those are really kind words. You said at the top, I think it's being the mother of four teenagers. I am nothing if not efficient. But it was an amazing conversation we just finished, and we're now on our way to look at some precision agriculture, and then we're headed to a sugar beet farm. So a really great day to be here.
I have heard President Trump say often, and we've been honored to interview him a few times, and he always talks about my farmers. I love my farmers. Yes. And the first administration, obviously, you grew up on a farm. You told us today you have roots in St. Cloud, Minnesota, which is pretty cool. So I know you're an Aggie, but it's nice to have some Minnesota roots as well. Talk about President Trump and his love for our producers.
Well, President Trump, I was blessed enough to be in his first administration for 3 years. I was there year two, year three, and year four. I eventually ended up running his entire domestic policy council and his domestic policy agenda. And so had worked alongside him throughout that first term, had planned for the second term, obviously, to be contiguous. And so when that didn't happen, I had kind of launched a new organization around his policy ideas. So all this to say that there may be others who are as partnered with President Trump as I am, but I don't know that there are many that are more that have been alongside him throughout this entire journey. And so when I say that his heart is with our farmers and that every, you know, talk to him almost daily, he's always asking me how everyone's doing, what, you know, what are they saying out there in the field? The very first phone call I had after I was voted in as Secretary of Agriculture by the U.S. Senate was with President Trump. And even yesterday, I was in Washington, D.C., and in the Oval Office, and he brought it up again. Brooke, how are my farmers? How are my farmers? So he understands that this is the backbone. This industry is the backbone of America, and he understands that it is an uncertain time and that everything and every move he makes is with putting America first and making America great again, but that at the center of all of it, center of all of it, are farmers and our ranchers.
And the roundtable today, you talked a lot about how we've not been dealt with necessarily by the world. We feed the world, but the trade deals are not favorable to the U.S. You led the organization America First during the interim between the two Trump administrations. Specific to agriculture and our products, what will change under President Trump in your tenure at USDA, putting American farmers and producers first?
Well, it was really incredible to me that when we left the last administration, when we walked out, that I walked out at midnight the night before President Biden was inaugurated. So I was one of the last one, the last dozen probably in that West Wing. And when we walked out, the trade deficit across the world for ag products was $0, meaning that we had no ag deficit, that all the products that went out, now we've got almost $50 billion in agriculture deficit after Joe Biden. And that's important because you think about every dollar of that $50 billion that once was in the pocket or should have been in the pocket of our farmers is now in the pockets of international other countries and agriculture producers in other countries. This president will not allow that to happen. As he renegotiates the trade deals, as we work to knock down non-tariff barriers, you know, Argentina won't take our live beef. The EU will barely buy our pork. China, of course, has taken so much advantage of us, especially our row croppers, that it's just stunning. So we're renegotiating all of that. But at the same time, I'll be moving out across the world into Japan and India and Vietnam and Brazil and Peru and other countries to ensure that we are selling our products and that they are allowing our products in a way that we have allowed theirs. So I think it's a new day in America, and I think we're going to begin to see the benefits of that very, very soon.
The program you're on right now is on the oldest radio station in North Dakota, 970 WDAY, and on a national platform with our friends at Hefty on the Acres TV platform. And this show, Weather and Ag Together, every day broadcast to the upper Midwest with Bridget Riedel, our ag director, one of the top 50 social media influencers in agriculture and the best meteorologist in the business, Dean Wysocki. These two have been taking questions from the audience today, and I'm a city kid from Minnesota, so we'll let Bridget, the real pro, take over here.
Secretary Rollins, this is fantastic. Thank you. And first of all, I was offered the opportunity to give you a big shout out and a congratulations to your son being named Yale Leader at Texas A&M, and that came from the Texas Ag Leaders Group. They wanted to make sure you knew about that.
Oh, I love it. Thank you.
You're welcome. As USDA has not had as many impacts from DOGE as other areas of government, what could change in the future? We know that there are retirements, there's changes in workforce. What might you anticipate could be effects?
Well, there is, first of all, a couple of quick important points, and I really appreciate that question. The effort of DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency, under Elon Musk, is just what it says it is. It's really the first time in our lifetimes that we have had an all of government put the hood up, look and see what's underneath it. And honestly, what we have found has been nothing short of shocking across the government. I'm sure y'all followed a lot of this. The contracts that have been canceled, the people receiving Social Security checks that died 100 years ago, people receiving unemployment benefits that were just born 3 months ago, of course, all under fraud, Medicaid, Medicare, et cetera. But to your point, USDA, certainly we're going through our own reduction in force. You'll see, you know, a significant reduction, but perhaps not as much as other agencies. And I think the reason is simple. The effort and the role of USDA in supporting our farmers and our ranchers is a massive one. Food security is national security. So all the FSA administrators, all of the NRCS, et cetera, that interfaces with our farmers every single day, we desperately have to have those people to keep our farmers and our ranchers in business and farming and to keep China and Brazil and other countries from continuing to eat into our food markets and making America not as that. So I think that the president's inherent understanding of the importance of USDA and realigning our agency to its original purpose of supporting farmers and ranchers is important. But having said that, you've got massive government programs like SNAP, like our food stamp program, that need real reform, that have seen a 40% increase under the last administration. While we have lost a little bit of our intentionality there and who are we feeding and what are we feeding them in terms of those on the lower end of the socioeconomic ladder, I mean, that we will never take food out of a hungry child's mouth, but we have to make sure that taxpayer dollars are spent as they are intended and in the best way possible. And so that's the balance we're striking at USDA.
And the balance isn't easy, particularly between cropping systems as well as livestock. And to that end, one of our livestock producer listeners has the question for you. Public lands management has shifted away from local control over the past several years. Under current administration, do you think that will continue, or will USDA be able to commit to allowing more local input to guide decisions on that public land?
Well, we've already made significant moves back in the direction of allowing the local farmers and ranchers and private business owners to work with our public lands. I think you've seen cases across the
We don't have the best connection.
Certainly
with
President Trump. Oh, can y'all hear me?
Yep, we can now.
Is this okay? Yep. Okay, great. I think that you'll see we've already made significant moves in that direction to return the power to the people. I mean, ultimately, that's what the president ran on. Making America great again means getting the power out of Washington and back to the people. And so in the agriculture arena, you'll see that perhaps more than any other arena. We are doing just that every day. We've already made some big decisions. I've signed a lot of memorandums, and you'll see even more of that moving forward.
Oh, I am very glad to hear you say those things. We were both state FFA officers the same year. I was in North Dakota. Ms. Rollins was in Texas. But we have many more things to do for youth and young ranchers. But, Dean, you had a question from a listener as well.
Yeah. Welcome, Secretary Rollins. Thanks for joining our show. We've got a question from John, one of our listeners, and he wants to know, what is the timeline and how will the USDA fill the role vacated by USAID to buy ag products like edible beans, peas, lentils, grains, and processed ag products for export to countries in need, as USAID was doing?
Right. Well, that is something we are hyper-focused on. I think as we begin to open up the markets, as we begin to recalibrate USDA and really making sure that our farmers have the best markets to sell in, USAID was an important tool for our local produce and a lot of our commodities farmers, and we recognize that. But at the same time, the president is rebalancing the economy and ensuring that the dollars that we take from taxpayers, hopefully through massive tax cuts, a lot of that is returned. But again, realizing that USAID program was very important, and we'll continue to work every day. The USDA, this is an incredible number, so get ready, spends $370 million congressionally appropriated and congressionally mandated on our food stamp, SNAP, and nutrition programs every day. $370 million. So somewhere in that program and in all of that money, we begin to recalibrate programs like USAID and others that are pivoting and that are basically phasing out under President Trump, but making sure that our farmers stay whole and that they're able to keep doing what they do so well.
Secretary Rollins, thanks for the time. Enjoy your tour at Grand Farm and at the Crystal Sugar Factory. We look forward to seeing you there and appreciate your time in North Dakota.
What a joy to be with y'all. God bless you all, and God bless the great state of North Dakota. Thank y'all.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Well, we're coming up on break, so when we come back, we're going to do a recap of the weather and let you know, yes, there is more rain in the forecast. That's good news. We'll hit on that and a few ag topics coming up right after the break. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus, 1:51 in the afternoon. Temperatures out there right now, 56 degrees. A little cooler in the Northern Valley. Grand Forks, you're only in the upper 40s, and north central part of the state in the mid 30s. But just south of the FM area, down around Wahpeton, temperatures in the low 60s. And from the FM area southward, we should make it into the low 60s today as we're starting to see more breaks in the clouds. So we'll see increasing sunshine for the rest of the afternoon, at least in the central and southern valley, a little later up north. And then as we head into tomorrow, more sunshine, a little breezy out of the west with winds at about 10 to 25 and highs in the mid-50s. And then more clouds come in Thursday, Friday. Maybe a few scattered showers Thursday night, but that's not going to be a big deal with highs in the upper 50s to near 60. The weekend looks split. Saturday looks decent with highs in the 60 to the lower 60s. It will start to turn breezy out of the south as we start to pull up more moisture. And that means showers and thunderstorms for Sunday and Monday. We'll be keeping an eye on that. Could see some stronger storms around the area on Monday. So that would be our first, if we do get any severe weather, that would be our first, quote-unquote, severe weather of the season.
Wait, would that be a little change for us?
So we'll take but beneficial rains Sunday and into Monday, as much of the area should be blanketed with at least a half inch to an inch of rain.
Absolutely.
That's good news.
Big thank you to all those folks who sent in questions this morning, or I got a number of text messages before we even went on air. So thanks for that. And we always appreciate when folks reach out to us through our JLA insurance phone line. That is 701-293-9000. Bear in mind that as you get rainfall and you are using especially those stellar WDAY official rain gauges, I would ask that you make sure to call us or email Dean or I and share with us what you got for rainfall, because that goes on to the National Weather Service. It's helpful for us here at the studio. So just don't forget about us. Make sure you send us what you're getting for rainfall totals. It's way more fun to count rainfall than it is to count snow, I'm afraid. But at least that's what most people would think.
Isn't that true?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so as we've talked about technology, and that's always on the forefront of our discussions, right? There's always something new and exciting coming. I mean, think about how excited folks were when your dimmer switch went from the floor to the column of your car. For those of you who are slow learners, you got your feet tangled in the steering wheel. But nonetheless, we see technology in other ways. And one of them is a company that's an AI solution provider. And I was told I always have to specify when I say AI. If it's artificial intelligence or artificial insemination, this time it's intelligence. I'm not talking cows. But Agmatics has announced a partnership with BASF. BASF is a German-based company. They are a world leader in chemistries and ag solutions, and they are bringing a digital solution to the farm to detect and predict presence of soybean cyst nematode. So SCN, as it is known, is a microscopic roundworm, one of the most destructive pests that affect soybean crops, causes an estimated loss of $1.5 billion in the U.S. by itself. Traditionally, when we go to detection methods or management, they're okay. They're not always perfect. We have to try to identify it. We have to make sure that we are right, using right hybrids, et cetera, when we're looking, or excuse me, varieties when we're in the field. But they are notoriously difficult to work with. The way a cyst nematode works is it infects the roots of the plant and feeds on the plant nutrients that causes stunted growth. Discoloration leads to reduced yields. And we don't make money on reduced yields. That's why we're always going for the gold. So this product is looking to come forward. Again, this is through Agmatics and BASF, and it would be a way for artificial intelligence to be able to help manage and detect soybean cyst nematode in fields. We're going to see where that lands to help us out in the future. Soybean cyst nematode covers a lot of the whole eastern half of North Dakota, basically. And then when you see it across a map across the U.S., we're talking all the Corn Belt, where we are heavy corn-soybean rotations. We're talking all the I states, Iowa, Indiana, Illinois, even down into the panhandle of Florida, we will see that happening. Now, for those of you who are fans of corn, and there's many of you out there.
Who's not?
Right. National Corn Growers Association is launching its fifth iteration of Consider Corn Challenge. It's a contest. You can submit a proposal for new uses of field corn to be quantifiable in market demand. Let me ask you this question. What does a plastic spoon have to do with corn? This goes way back into some of these challenges.
Tell me.
There's a corn plastic. It is actually biodegradable. It'll break down in about 5 to 7 years in a landfill versus a petroleum-based plastic silverware, spoon, whatever you want to call it. So I use that in fourth grade classroom demonstrations, and kids are like, you can eat corn with a spoon. Or this spoon's made of corn, and it melts, kind of,
in
a landfill. Yeah, it's just like any other plastic spoon.
Okay.
Yep. But that's the type of innovation that these contests are looking for. Previous winners have received prizes that can increase from $50,000 up to $300,000. There can be investments by state corn associations, and it's called the Radical Challenge. But it's spelled like the radical on a corn seed. That's one of the first growth extensions off of a corn seed, okay. R-A-D-I-C-L-E. So the Radical Challenge invests a minimum of $1.5 million for new uses with field corn to individuals and companies. So folks are out there, they're using this Consider Corn Challenge, and they're looking for your ideas to see what you might want to bring forward as something that could be done with corn in the future. The submission deadline is June 30th. You still have time. So I'm not sure how quickly you want to plant some corn so you can figure out what to do with it. It won't be mature by June 30th around here. You have to work a little harder than that.
Gotta love technology.
Well, I think it's kind of fun that this is where things come from. You know, wasn't that 2 weeks ago we talked about a plastic that's based, soybean-based instead of petroleum-based? So it's an improvement on saran wrap. Now, nobody told me if it melts down in a landfill the same way these corn plastics do for silverware, but maybe. And if it does, cool. That'd be awesome. So we're going to see what it does.
Good deal.
Big shout out today for Secretary Rollins joining us. Thank you to her.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I wish we had more time with her. There's a lot of questions that we didn't get to.
I think I had another eight
yeah.
on my list. But I tried to balance between what do we need to hear for all of agriculture, you had something in the cropping systems, and I was looking at from the livestock perspective.
Yeah. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us this afternoon on Weather and Ag in Focus. Get out and enjoy the sunshine. We'll see more of that as we head into the evening hours. So for Bridget, myself, thank you again. We'll see you tomorrow, but don't go anywhere. The Jay Thomas Show, it's coming up next.